Especially for those of us born in the modern West, life has become about, or tends to be, and perhaps unconsciously, we live as if life is about outcomes, and that we are manipulators of one another and of the world around us. Life is about whether I am receiving pleasure, whether I am happy, whether I am content. Life is about success and accomplishment. Life is about reaching my potential and meaningful activity. This, over the last few hundred years, has led to an illusion that all things are controllable. We feel like we ought to be, at least, the ones in control, either as a political group or as individuals in our own lives. And today we read the words handed down to us over thousands of years that human beings were made to know God, and that this is possible, especially through Jesus Christ and Jesus Christ crucified. This is where we have turned, and where millions of others have turned in their search to know God, to Jesus Christ on the cross. And when we turn to know God, we find rest and peace. That's the snapshot, the roadmap for what I'm about to say. I know it's often hard to follow anything. Where is he going now? And what was he trying to say? This sense that we have control in life, as I've thought about it, remind me of when we get a device or when we get something new, we ought to read the instructions first, but maybe we don't. And we go to use it and it doesn't work. And there are these funny stories that you know have been collected by people who work, those unfortunate souls who work at the return desk and receive complaints as people return things. Like the woman who took a Bluetooth speaker back and said, "It doesn't work." And I said, "Well, what did you connect it to?" "What do you mean connect it to? It's a speaker. I just wanted to, like in the commercials where it played music." And I said, "Well, you need to connect it to something." "Well, I don't know what you're talking about. It didn't work." Or the person who returned a frying pan, who said, this thing doesn't make any good food. Or the person who returned an air mattress, and said, it just would not keep the air in it. There was nothing I could do. And the person said, "Well, when you closed the valve, where was the air leaking from?" And they said, close the valve? Or the person who returned a self-cleaning oven, saying that not only was the oven not getting clean, it was ruining all the dishes that they were putting in there in the hopes that it would clean everything all at once. When we are using something incorrectly, it often leads to problems. And we then think after the fact, if only I had known the instruction manual, then I could get everything right. I could use it the way it was intended. We have that similar sense about our lives. That is, I've been taught, at any rate, by learned men and women, we have this sense of our own lives, it's unique to people raised in the modern West, that if we only had the instruction manual for a human life, or for an economy, or for medical care, or for the natural world, if we only had that instruction manual, or rather, once we have it completely, then everything will fall into place. We will be able to manage our lives, the economy, our health, our nations, and everything will go well. We have been partially successful. We have seen human health improve, human health outcomes improve. We have seen, arguably, some progress in managing the economy. Although there's still people who say, you have a better chance of predicting the future of the economy by throwing a dart at a board. We have seen success through technique in relationships and in personal well-being. And these small victories give us a sense that maybe everything is controllable. But then when something doesn't go right, when things aren't working out, what does that lead us to conclude? Well, that I'm defective. There's something wrong with me. In fact, we look at other people and they seem to be getting it all right, and that just compounds the feelings of shame and guilt and ineffectiveness and weakness that we feel. And so we search for clearer instructions. We ask people who ought to know better, people who know the techniques, managers, public speakers, therapists. Or we get angry and we blame the manufacturer. We blame God. This is your fault. What all of this overlooks is that chance, and here, for those of you who know, been listening to me over the last few months, my apologies, here I am again quoting Alistair McIntyre. Chance, he argues, plays a huge role in life and in this world. Successful people don't want to point that out, because they are successful because they've got it all figured out. Motivational speakers don't want to acknowledge luck. Therapists, managers, your boss does not want to acknowledge that luck may be the reason that things you haven't done met your quota. All these people act as though everything is controllable. And to be fair, we blame our politicians when things don't work out for these very reasons. If we just had the right information, the right technique, and so we turn to people to help us fix these things in our companies, in our world, in our lives. This applies today to the problems with our history, with Indigenous people, the Indigenous peoples of Canada. And we are looking for techniques to resolve them. And when we turn to God, what God says is that it's about relationships, that we need to listen to one another and know each other's names and to try and work through all that has gone wrong. But we tend to rely on these techniques. The problem with being successful at those techniques, the problem with any time in life where you're having success, is that you tend to get more and more confident. And sociologists have tracked this among athletes, among stock market players, among politicians, that the more successful they are, the riskier their behavior becomes. They think, I'm never going to lose, until they do. But by then, the consequences for their actions can be devastating for everyone, as we found out in 2008. And to be fair, conversely, we tend to blame everything on bad luck when things don't go well in our lives, when in fact often we have played a significant role in things not working out and need to take responsibility. There is chance, but there is hard work, there is learning, there is persistence. If you'll apologize for, once again, me turning to a hockey analogy, the Carolina Hurricanes won the Stanley Cup last week. I struggled, of course, as a Leafs fan. What are we at? 60 years of bad luck. Just bad luck. That's all it is. But Carolina has spent years being one of the best teams in the NHL. I don't know what it is. So we're at 10 years. They've been one of the best teams. And they have done this through what is shot volume and puck possession. So that means that you make sure you hold the puck, you don't give up the puck, and you just take as many shots as possible. The thing is that for 10 years, they never won the Stanley Cup. And that's really the only thing that matters in hockey. And people would say, see, it doesn't work. Their system doesn't work. And they're saying, no, there's so much luck in hockey. There's so many random results that just keep hold of the puck and take as many shots, and you never know what's going to happen. Now, for years, everyone said they're not right. Now they've won the Stanley Cup. Of course they're right. And now at next year, everyone's going to start with puck possession and shot volume. Stephen Leacock, I think it was him who said this, I'm a great believer in luck, and I find the harder I work, the more I have of it. I don't believe there's an answer to this question of hard work, of persistence, of learning, of effort, and of just the randomness and the chance of life that happens to every person under the sun around the world. If things are working out for you, the ancient wisdom that has been passed down to us, if things are working out for you, give thanks to God. Every good gift comes from God. But equally, be careful, be humble, because you never know when things could change. And gosh, the stories of people who have said, I will never be moved. Everything is working out for me, and the sun will shine on me to the very end, and then the next day, something changed. Boy, we've heard a lot of those stories. But if it's not about this, does that change the conversation as well? If we know ahead of time that we weren't made for everything to work out, that in fact, we have to die. If we know that that's the end for us all, we know that God has not made us for everything to work out in life, but that there's something else that is going on here. In all of our lives, those who are at the peak of what human beings can accomplish and those for whom things have not worked out, Jesus said over and over again that life is about knowing God. That is the purpose. That is what we heard in Jeremiah, and this is what we heard Jesus say as well. And if there's anyone who should know God, you would think it would be Jesus, at least in the minds of Christians. We confess that Jesus Christ was fully God. And Jesus said here in Matthew's scripture today, I know God the Father, and God the Father knows me. Jesus had all the possible inside information there could be. He had read whatever use before use, a read before use instruction manuals that come with being human there are. He had all of those manuals and instructions. He knew them well. He was God, the manufacturer. He knew what life was about. He knew what it meant to succeed in life. If there was anyone who could have drawn on expertise or skill or knowledge or ability, it was Jesus Christ. He should have achieved everything possible. That was important, at any rate. And instead, we know that Jesus wept. We know that friends turned on him. We know that people laughed at him. We know that compared with others of his day, he never amounted much to much in his earthly life. And then he suffered and he died, a young man. One of the few prayers that Jesus said, which very words are recorded, was read today by Dell. I thank you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and the intelligent, and you have revealed them to infants. Yes, Father, for such was your gracious will. To all those who turn to technique, or all those who teach the techniques of one kind or another, in the end, Jesus says, it is simple. Something a child can understand. This is life, to know God. That is your job as a human being. That is our jobs as a species, together, to live and in the end to die, knowing God and trusting God. When I came to the prairies from the outskirts, having grown up on the outskirts of Toronto, I was delighted in how easy it was to get to really dark skies. And Reed and I would drive out into the countryside often into the night and with star books and begin to identify what was going on around us. Northern lights were so common then. I remember getting out there and going, oh, for crying out loud, the northern lights again. Can't see a thing. But we spent so many evenings looking at the stars. And I remember just my wonder and amazement when I realized that with my naked eye, I could see Andromeda, the nearest galaxy in the sky. You could see it with your naked eye if someone points it out to you at night in a really dark sky. It's just a faint oblong smudge. And to me, that was just phenomenal to think that these millions of stars that I can see right now were all, there was a whole other cluster of them right there that I could see with my naked eye. And then the pictures from the Hubble telescope, yes, that's how old I am, the pictures from the Hubble telescope deep field were published of a section, just a little, if you hold up a grain of sand, salt or sand to the sky, a picture about that big from deep into space was published. and it showed hundreds of galaxies of all different shapes and colors. It was so beautiful. And I remember just being marveled, what human being could possibly keep all of this universe in their minds? All of these stars alone are hard to conceive, just my own galaxy. And then to think that everywhere I look, there were galaxies in every direction. What human mind could gather that? And then I wondered, God is even beyond that. Not only can I not conceive of everything within the microwave background of our universe, God goes beyond that. Who could possibly understand and know God unless God became human? So that we could see and hear for ourselves what God really was like in terms that we would get. Unless God could reveal to us in a way that we could understand who God really was and what it really means to be a human being. And in Jesus Christ, this is what we see. The identity of the Creator's true nature, and the Creator's true purpose for us. That we would live and that we would die. That we would know God throughout that life and in our death. Jesus said of himself, "No one can know the Father except me and anyone to whom I choose to reveal the Father." To know Jesus Christ by his grace, to know Jesus on the cross, in his death and his resurrection, is to know God. And then Jesus takes a step further here that isn't intuitive to me at any rate. After his prayer, he says, "Come to me and you will find rest. Turn your burdens over to me." Jesus puts the strongest possible connection between knowing God and finding rest. He directly connects these things in his teaching here. To know God is to find rest, to find peace, to find comfort. And so it is simple. God has hidden these things from the wise and the intelligent, but revealed them to infants. It is simple, but that doesn't mean it's easy. When we come to God to know God, we find that it is not just a walk in the park. But the first step is repentance and confession. And this is what defines us to our dying day. This practice of admitting that we need to be forgiven, that there are things to confess, and then thanks be to God, we are forgiven and loved. And we find that God asks us these questions. Are you right with everyone in your life? Is there anyone, and today I say, is there any peoples with whom you need to be reconciled? Your job is to be made for things to be made right. Your job is to seek reconciliation. Your job is relationship, listening, restitution, getting to know each other. And so this is not a political agenda, but rather a spiritual duty that we have been given by Jesus. The consolation is caught up in that whole circle of seeking God, of seeking to be made right, of seeking to be made right with one another, and finding that there we have our peace and our rest, which equips us to again pursue with renewed vigor being made right with God, being made right with others, and again finding that rest and peace in God and in knowing God. It is not easy, but it is simple. As you've heard many times, I think, this well-known quote from St. Augustine, "You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you." You have made us for yourself. That's how we've been made. And our hearts are restless until they rest in you. Here is my confession as someone born and raised in the West, who believes in spite of knowing better, that if I could just eat better and exercise more and pray on time and manage my affairs, maybe see a therapist, I would get my life in order. And when the truth is much simpler, but this is my struggle. I get up in the morning and I think of how busy I am. I think of how many things I have to do, and I'm just going to do a few of them, and I don't stop and pray and sit in silence. Or I'm actually frustrated. I don't want to pray today. I've had enough of you not answering prayers and just continuing to dump on me problems and things not working out. I'm too angry to pray. Or I'm distracted. And I wish you could have somehow observed, without anyone to know that you were observing, Friday night with our youth group. These incredible adults were sitting in my backyard, 12 or 10, I don't know, Addy, how many were, about 12 actually, 10, yeah, something like that. And in this neighborhood, like right next to me is this house where like all day and all night people are coming and going. There's just no shortage of messes around it. Even as people were pulling up, there were two people collapsed on the sidewalk, sprawled out. Is there something we can do? I said, there's nothing we can do. You can call 911. They won't do anything. There's nothing that can be done. You can stir them awake, and as long as they wake up, there's nowhere for them to go. That's just every day. And these young people, for like 40 minutes, 45 minutes, were singing these beautiful praise songs to God. It was so hard for me to help lead the singing. I was just so moved to hear God's praise going out in this neighborhood. And to imagine that because I have no garage, I mean, the sound just travels now. All the balconies, the neighbors coming and going next door, hearing these songs of praise, and these young people. And this morning, even as I reviewed this passage, and I was reminded that if I would just pray, if I would just sit in silence and enjoy God's, the fact that I get to know God through Jesus, I would find rest. When will I learn? When will I learn? Why did I spend yesterday, as my wife will tell you, why did I spend yesterday so grumpy and touchy, and even most of Friday? So this is our calling, to make the time every day. It is our privilege. It is what we were meant for, how we were made. Make the time to sit. Make the time to listen to God. What might God say to you? Make the time to sing. Make the time to read. Or make the time to pour out your thoughts and feelings. Plead for help. Or give thanks for the way the boundary lines have fallen in good places for you. Or just sit and focus on God and God's goodness and God's love. This next hymn is a special, at least to many of us, a special reminder of that truth that's been handed down to us. That Jesus has promised to be with us to the very end, to carry our burdens, that his yoke is easy, that in him we find rest. And we lift up to him all these things that we hope for, and in all the complexity that we sense, the complexities of our relationships around the world, the peoples that are at odds with each other, the things that haven't gone well in our own lives, the failures, our own failures and mistakes, our own longings and desires. We lift all of these things up, remembering that we have been called to know God. Let's sing together this prayer. What a friend we have in Jesus. Hymn number 435 in your pew hymnals. The words printed for those of you, being shared for those of you joining us over Zoom. Let's sing together.